All right, I'm Angela Marie Patnode. Welcome to today's teaching, and thank you all for coming. It's wonderful to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
All right, glad you're here. Great. Tonight's teaching that I want to get into is what Jack Kornfield, who is a leading meditation Buddhist teacher here in the West, what he calls healing the mind. He has a part that's called healing the mind and healing the heart. And Jack is one of the leading teachers in the West. He's one of the teachers, primary teachers that brought Buddhism, Theravadan Buddhism, to the West in the 70s. And he was a trained monk, studied in Burma and India, and came over and brought the teachings here. He's one of the co-founding teachers of the Insight Meditation Society and Spirit Rock Meditation Center. So he does a lot. He's got a great website of a lot of teachings as well. And this book called A Path with Heart. It's a beautifully written book, and he really touches on a lot of the foundational pieces of the spiritual path. I really want to look at the healing of the mind in relation to the healing of the heart, because they're both such an important part of our path and what that looks like, and how meditation plays into that and is an important part of that path as well. And what Jack calls a wanting of endless excitement and perfect peace is the nature of the self or the ego, a wanting of endless excitement and perfect peace. And ultimately that can't happen. And so we're constantly dissatisfied. We're looking for things outside of ourselves. And what our mind does is it creates this separateness from ourselves and from everything around us. And whether the mind is the ego and the ego is the mind, I don't know. Jack refers to the mind as the self. I don't know. There's ways that we can create thoughts in our mind that aren't so ego-based. So I'm not sure where that lies. And when we have that separateness that the mind tends to go to, there is what's called a dualistic nature. So our mind tends to think in either or, black and white, right or wrong, good or bad. And those thoughts create a separateness. And those thoughts create a lot of internal conflict. So we have conflict in our minds. And there's a beautiful and funny little story that Jack tells about this psychiatrist from Stanford that really emphasizes this point. He says, a psychiatrist from the Stanford University School of Medicine discovered these truths when he attended his first 10-day intensive retreat. While he had studied psychoanalysis and been in therapy, he had never actually encountered his own mind in the nonstop fashion of 15 hours a day of sitting and walking meditation. He later wrote an article on this experience in which he described how a professor of psychiatry felt sitting and watching himself go crazy. The nonstop flood of thought astounded him, as did the wild variety of stories it told. Especially repetitions were thoughts of self-aggrandizement, of becoming a great teacher or famous writer or even world savior. He knew enough to look at the source of these thoughts, and he discovered they were all rooted in fear. During the retreat, he was feeling insecure about himself and what he knew. These grand thoughts were the mind's compensation so he would not have to feel the fear of not knowing. Over the many years since, this professor has become a very skillful meditator, but he first had to make peace with the busy and fearful patterns of an untrained mind. He has also learned since that time not to take his own thoughts too seriously. So this is someone who's studied PhD of the mind, right? But he didn't really understand it until he sat and watched it. And that's what the Buddha did under the Bodhi tree. Like, Buddha says, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to watch thoughts and see the truth. See the truth of it. Know the truth versus reading about it in a book or listening to a podcast. I mean, not to devalue those, or talks such as I'm giving. They're helpful on the path, but it's really sitting and listening and observing, noticing what you're seeing, what the truth is. So we can have a lot of intellectual information, but it's not going to show us the truth of our thought. That's what meditation does for us. It helps us become intimate with our own mind, the mind, not my mind, but the nature of the mind, to think. That's its job. Thinking, thinking, thinking. And oftentimes, as I said, those thoughts are in conflict because of that separateness that's created through judgment, through resentment, through fear, through beliefs about ourselves, beliefs about our body. There are two ways that we heal the mind. One is more of a psychological step. It's the first step, and it's really helpful. And it's called redirecting the mind. This is something that I do a lot with clients and coaching. And it might look like when the mind is speaking unskillfully towards ourselves or other people. Or, as I'm going to say this more bluntly, like, has anyone read Dan Harris, 10% Happier? Has anyone read that book? It's a great read. It's really funny. And in the book, he has this moment where he's reading Eckhart Tolle's book. What's it called? No, it's the other one. Finding Your Purpose, something like that. And he's reading in there, and it's like the third time he's read the book, and he's reading a paragraph, and all of a sudden he realizes the voice in his head. He had never had this objective perspective of the voice in his head, and he goes, and then I realized the voice in my head is really an asshole. That's just another way of saying unskillful. Maybe a more modern way, in modern day way of saying unskillful, as the Buddha would say.
Childish.
Yeah. And so when we start to see the voice in our head that's saying negative things about ourselves or about other people, when we start to notice that, we can change it, right? And from that change, we can actually create a new pathway. So if our mind has been going down the same pathway, the same neural pathway of negative self-thoughts, judgments towards self, judgment towards others, fear, we can actually change that pathway through awareness. When we notice it going down this old pattern, we can create a new pattern. It's scientifically proven. We can create a new neural pathway. And with that, it might look like setting intentions is a great way to start shifting or continue to shift those thought patterns. Or it might look like affirmations. So an intention is it's like an aim that guides our action. So it sounds like to be more loving, to be more open-hearted would be an example. And an affirmation is a taking an intention and putting it in the present tense as if it's already happened. So that might sound like, I am open-hearted, I am loving. So those are ways that we can actively change those neural pathways in our mind and changing the thought patterns. And we can also do that through truth-telling. Truth-telling might look like when you notice you're in fear. Oh my God. If I don't get this done, then this is going to happen. And you know, this person's going to think this about me. And when you notice the fear's happening, stop, take a breath, and go, okay, what's the truth? Everything's okay right now. If this doesn't get done, it will still be okay. That's truth-telling. And we can actively change our thought pattern around fear from that truth-telling. So that's the re-educating the mind. And that's the first and a really important step for changing the thought patterns and healing the mind. And then the second step, or the second piece, which is a layer deeper, and it's more hidden. And this is finding where we're identified in thought. Finding where the ego or the self is identified in the thoughts that are happening. And this is where meditation, another place where meditation is really important. So meditation creates that space that we can see where we're having negative self-talk or unskillful actions towards others. And it also creates space for us to see where we're identified. And how do we know? How would we know where we're identified? And I was thinking about this earlier today, like, how do I know when there's identification happening? And I'll give you an example from a few years ago. I was when I was out guiding and I was working with a co-instructor. We were in conversation and I said something like, oh yeah, that was a great climb. We had climbed something. Oh yeah, that was a great climb. I'm so tired from the climb, you know, I need to sleep some more. And he goes, you always talk about how tired you are. And this bell went off in my head. At first I was pissed. I was angry. Like, what is it? You know, how can he say? You know, he's like 20 years younger than me. Like, you know, he has no right to tell me I'm tired, you know, or not tired. Or call me on my stuff. He's only 25. And I realized that this bell went off. He is being a mirror for me. He is showing me exactly where I'm identified, because I had gotten in this pattern of saying that I was tired. I felt tired, but I was identified with it. So it doesn't mean we're ignoring what's happening. It's just seeing where we're attached to our being. We're attached to ourself. So I'm identifying me through being tired. And so I said after that to myself, okay, I'm not going to say I'm tired anymore. And what miraculously happened is I became less tired. Because I was so identified with it, it was creating my reality. Yeah, Robin.
I think of an example of that too. Mm-hmm. On BWAC hikes, I used to say, I'd tell new people, oh, I'm a little pokey. You know, and I would be. I would always be one of the last people. And mm-hmm. That's out of my vocabulary now. I don't say that. And I keep up with big girls.
Yeah.
I just don't even think that way anymore.
Yeah. It's like we create our reality with where we're identified. Or for someone, either yourself or someone you know, that talks about how busy they are all the time, or a lot of the time. You hear that. They're either in an email or in a phone call. That's how they're interacting. That's where they're identified, is with that busyness. Or it could be a wound from the past. And these are bigger wounds. I'm going to give examples of bigger wounds, like, perhaps you were an alcoholic in the past, and so you continue to talk about AA meetings and having a sponsor, and not to discount that stuff in any way, but just notice where there's identification. I have become someone recovered from alcohol versus just being me as I am now. Or if you were adopted in the past and you have a wound of abandonment, and that is part of your story, you know, of how you were given away, or like that's how you're identified. The teaching there is actually to look right at that and heal that wound so you can move through it and leave the story, because that's ultimately what it is now. It's not to discount any of your past experience or any of the pain or the loss or the discomfort of any of that. But at some point on the spiritual path, it's important for you to leave the story behind. Because it's keeping you in a box. It's keeping you less than your true essence, less than your authentic self. There's a beautiful story by my teacher, Matthew, who he was 3 years into studying with his teacher, Bhante Gunaratana. And he spent 8 hours a day with Bhante the first at least 3 years, if not 5 years. And he was with him every day. Matthew had a challenging childhood with his mother. His mother was often very negative towards him and was pretty harsh, it sounded like, at times. And this was Matthew's story. This is where he was identified. And he would tell this story to Bonte, tell another story about what his mom had done, and then another story about what his mom had done. And Bonte listened over, 1 year, 2 years, listening to the story. And then 3 years into it, they're driving in the car one day, and Matthew comes up with another story about his mom. And Bonte says, when he's done, he goes, "Are you done?" And Matthew said, "Yeah, that's the end of the story, for today, for this, this one event." And Bonte goes, "No, are you done?" Only Bonte talks like this. "Are you done?" That's more Bonte's voice. And then in that moment, Matthew said he got it. Oh, this is where I'm I've been living in this story. When am I going to leave it behind? I can't move forward until I leave this story in the past. And again, it's not to discount the pain. He wasn't discounting the pain that he went through, but he was done with the story. He had healed, and it was time to move on. And this is a really important moment of realization on the path to being your true essence, to being your authentic self. And we have different stories. Some are smaller, and some are bigger. I had a story about being a guide, being in the mountains. Where'd you go this summer? I went to Alaska, but I'd be secretly wishing them to ask, "Well, where'd you go?" And then they'd ask me where I went. I'd be like, "Oh, goody, they asked me where I went." "Well, I was on Denali." "Oh, were you guiding up there?" "Oh, great, they asked that question. Cool." Right? And looking where I was wanting to get that validity, that I was enough, that I was worthy of this existence, so to speak. Those external rewards. In meditation, we can see where we're identified when we get caught up in the story and we start having emotion from the thought. And what I'm talking about is like you start thinking about something and then you start getting angry, or you feel worried, or you have some other emotion in there that's identified, it's caught up with the story of the thought. So we can see it in meditation. When we see it, it's not a judgment of ourselves. "Oh my God, I'm selfing again. Oh, I shouldn't be doing that." It's, "Oh, back to the breath. That's it. And there's a great quote that Jack talks about in his book from the Buddha. And the Buddha says, "People with opinions just go around bothering one another." Isn't that great? Yeah. So we hold on to those identities, the way we think things should be, or supposed to be, how we are, how others are. We're just bothering each other. Similar to that Buddhist, or maybe it's a Zen quote, "You can be right or you can be happy." It's the same concept, right? That when we're holding on to something as "this is right," that's where we're identified. It causes us our happiness. And then Jack goes on to say, "When we see that the mind's very nature is to think, to divide, to plan, we can release ourselves from its iron grip of separatism and come to rest in the body and heart. In this way, we step out of our identification, out of our expectations, opinions, and judgments, and the conflicts to which they give rise. The mind thinks of the self as separate. The heart knows better." Isn't that beautiful? The mind thinks of the self as separate. The heart knows better. As one great Indian master, Sri Nisargadatta, put it, the mind creates the abyss and the heart crosses it. I love that. The mind creates the abyss and the heart crosses it. The abyss of separateness, the heart knows it's not, we're not separate, that it's not separate. And so when we look at healing the mind, healing and softening the ego, and not seeing the ego as bad or evil, that's really important. Otherwise we're rejecting ourselves. That the heart is our guide in that. Our heart is the bridge that connects. If all we're doing is intellectualizing the spiritual path, we're missing out. We can only go so far. The heart has to be joined in that path. And we join it through feeling. Through feeling when we sit, allowing emotions to move through, grief, sadness, joy, despair, jealousy, letting it move through without judgment. We listen, as we talked about in last week's teaching, listening, listening without expectation, listening in meditation to just the sound, to the spaciousness behind the thoughts, without expectation of what is there. We become observant to the conflicts of the mind versus getting caught up in the conflicts of the mind. And from this we create spaciousness. There's an essence, and you might experience for just a moment in meditation when you're sitting there, and there's an ease, there's a grounding or an openness or a spaciousness that is there all the time. And the mind, because it's so smart, it takes us away from that. And that's okay that it does that. And through meditation and practice, we can train, not control. I'm not saying control. We can train to have a different relationship with thought. Any questions or thoughts or...
I see projection being a big part of this. You talk about clinging or wanting it to be a certain way or whatever. I see it as projection.
Mm-hmm.
And without the projection, then you can see what's really there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, exactly. The projection is coming from our belief, mm-hmm. based on past experiences. What we know from what we've experienced from the past creates the belief system that we live from. What teachers, parents, not blaming them in any way, it's just part of the human experience. Pains we've experienced create our belief system. All right. So what I want to do is, for just a moment, we're going to do a short, just a 1.5 minute, closing our eyes, and watching thoughts from the place of spaciousness in the place of the heart, and being open to whatever the experience is. I'm closing the eyes, taking a deep breath in, and exhale. I'm allowing the breath to naturally breathe in and breathe out. And watch thought as the thought arises and the thought passes. And come back to that stillness in your heart, or the spaciousness. It's beyond thought, or the spaciousness that thought arises from. And then coming back to the breath when the mind wanders. And gently opening the gaze. Thank you all for coming this evening. I really appreciate your presence. It's so wonderful to have you here. Namaste.
Namaste.